I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Back in 1974, if you were in the mood to get up off of that thing, Kinshasa, Zaire was the place to be. For 3 days, the most celebrated African and African-American musical acts of the time, from James Brown to Bill Withers to Celia Cruz to Miriam Makeba, could all be seen on one hastily assembled stage. The festival had been scheduled as part of the run-up to the Rumble in the Jungle, the storied heavyweight championship fight between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. The fight wound up being postponed, but the festival went on. The making of the festival and the electric performances themselves are documented in the new film Soul Power. Joining us now is the director of Soul Power, Jeffrey Levy Hinty, and one of the featured artists, the legendary vocalist and songwriter, Bill Withers. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure to be here.
How are you?
We're very well. Bill Withers, I'm going to start with you. You performed, as we said, at the three-day concert, and I just can't resist, because you haven't given us an album for some time now, so I'm going to start by playing a little clip of your powerful performance in the concert where you sing Hope She'll Be Happier, and here it is.
I never thought that she really would leave me. But she's gone. Maybe the darkness of the hour.
Why did you want to go?
You know, it seemed like an interesting place to go. You know, if somebody asked you to go to the moon, you'd probably say, well, sure, you got time, you know. You know, it's somewhere that you've never been. It was all magical, you know, thing. So, although I didn't stay for the fight.
Well, that would have taken some time. You would have had to have had a lot of time because it wound up being postponed for quite a while. But you mentioned, you know, if somebody said go to the moon, in the film, Muhammad Ali makes the point that a lot of people didn't go to Africa back then for particularly as tourists. And he said, now I don't know if he was exaggerating, I think that he was, but he says that he had these misconceptions that there were lions walking around the street and could, you know, eat you. But were there expectations that you had going that you were surprised when you got there? It wasn't as you had envisioned it.
Well, I had envisioned that it had evolved from the stereotypical perception of it. You know what I mean? I didn't like that they titled it The Rumble in the Jungle. I thought that was insulting to the Zairean people, and I think they did too, you know? So that kind of slipped under the radar. You know, I had been burned by that kind of perception before. I remember going to Japan when I was in the Navy back in the 1950s, and there were some people that thought we actually had tails. You know, so myths can be very, very wounding. And so I went out of curiosity. It was a little more like Miami than I thought it would be. We stayed at the Kinshasa Hilton. That was like a hotel in Miami or something. So processing all of that was interesting for me, and no, I never thought that it was going to be a jungle over there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, sure. Jeffrey, speaking of this, this concert happened back in 1974. Why is the movie just coming out now?
You know, it kind of traveled this path, this journey. You know, the first 10 years were basically litigation. The next 10 years were Leon Gast working on a film, which tried to bring in the fight and the musical performances. That proved to be just a very difficult task. But at the end of that is what When We Were Kings came out of. It was the revelation that the way to solve the puzzle was actually to try to sort of move to one side and to really embrace the fight. Of course, that then left the other opportunity to say, well, wait a sec, there's this whole music festival there that was touched upon in Kings, but it really wasn't dealt with. So that was my opportunity to step in another 10 years later to make another movie.
And you mentioned When We Were Kings, which is a film that I think many people have seen that focused on the boxing match, The Rumble in the Jungle. And you edited that film.
Correct.
And when you edited the film at the time, did you envision making another film? Or did that idea come later when you saw all the great stuff you were leaving on the floor?
You know, I didn't necessarily know I would make a film out of it. But what I did know is that going back into the vault were some of the most amazing musical performances. I mean, Bill Withers' performance among them. And just this wonderful insight and documentation as to sort of the everyday life of these musicians and how they felt about going to Zaire and then the logistics of putting it on. So I knew all that. And I really sort of, I didn't allow myself to think about making a feature film until, you know, about 10 years later. And it really was a process of becoming a better filmmaker and educating myself and having the confidence. Because it's very daunting. Also, Kings was very successful. And you don't want to sort of follow up something that's so successful with a film that people can see is kind of the second cousin, you know, the kind of the lesser
the outtakes.
One. Exactly. Well, the also rounds.
But this clearly is not that. I mean, the film, you really are a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
And it talks about all of what it took to bring that many artists to one place where they weren't even creating the infrastructure. You get the impression that they were building the stage when they were flying over.
They were, in fact.
But it also shows you these very un-Hollywood moments, particularly at a time when I don't think we were used to seeing those kinds of candid looks at these artists. Mr. Withers, I want to play a short clip. Where you were asked what you were going to bring back from your trip to Zaire, and here it is.
So what we're coming back here with is what we left here with, plus the influences that we picked up from living where we've lived for the last 300-400 years or whatever, you know.
Right.
So we're coming back now in the same form, but with other places on it. And I know I'm going to go home knowing something. Just somebody asked me, what are you going to bring back? You're going to bring back any souvenirs? Somebody wants cloth and all like that. What I want to bring back is the feeling.
Do you remember that feeling?
No, I don't remember saying that, but hopefully we carry our attitude throughout our lives. So I'm not surprised that that's what I said.
Sure. And Jeffrey, one of the things that I think people will like about the film, I know that I liked about the film, was on the one hand, you had these incredible performances. I mean, and you're just like right there on the stage. And again, remember, this is at a time when we didn't get a lot of that. I mean, now these days, these kind of behind the scenes and, you know, we've seen that. But you show, say, the backup dancers from the African dancers and the African-American dancers.
Yeah, that's actually Sister Sledge.
That's Sister Sledge?
Sister Sledge backstage hanging out with the dancers from Afrisa. And they're
showing
teaching,
each other steps.
Exactly. They're teaching the African dancers the bump, which they immediately transform into a whole other type of performance, which is funny because, you know, at that time, Sister Sledge, the youngest, I think, was maybe 15 or 16. I mean, they were children. And they just have a beautiful energy throughout the film. Unfortunately, I didn't get one of their performances into the movie, which is my great regret.
I want to play another clip of one of the, well, there's so many memorable moments from the concert. I'm going to play just one. And, well, here's a name everybody knows. Here it is.
This man will make your bladder splatter. This man will freeze your knees. If you will, let's all welcome the world's godfather of soul, soul brother number one, James Brown! James Brown! James Brown!
So, Bill Withers, was it fun?
Yeah, it was fun because, I mean, how often are you going to get George Plimpton, Norman Mailer, Bud Schulberg, James Brown, and the Spinners, and me in the same place? They play different venues. They have different audiences. And so watching people react to each other was the most interesting part of it for me. But you mentioned the African-American artists over there. Well, oddly enough, the music that the African people responded most to was the Fania All-Stars, the Puerto Rican band, B. because the African music was closer to what the Fania All-Stars did than what B.B. King did or I did.
Well, in fact, there's this wonderful moment where some of the members of the Fania All-Stars are out. I think
in the marketplace. Probably,
in the marketplace, and they're looking at instruments, and they start jamming.
Yeah, it's Ray Barretto is
Ray Barretto.
Playing at a public performance, right, in the marketplace.
And it was this amazing moment where some of the other guys come from the marketplace, and they bring their instruments, and they just start jamming. And yeah. it was really great. Let's hear a clip of that.
Happened like that.
It really happened like that.
Spontaneous, and it just happened.
There's your illustration there. It was much more likely for them to jam with the Fania All-Stars because of the similarity of the music than it was for them to jam with James Brown. You know what I mean?
Sure. If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Jeffrey Levy Hinty, the director of the new documentary Soul Power, and the legendary singer-songwriter Bill Withers, who is featured in the film. It's about the historic three-day concert featuring African and African-American musical artists in Zaire in 1974. One of the ideas of the concert is to embody African pride and African-American pride at a time when this was felt to be in short supply on both continents. And I wanted to ask Bill Withers, did the concert do that for you?
Well, I never had any problem with that in the first place. The whole experience growing up here during that time, I was born in the 30s, and one survival mechanism was to value yourself in spite of being devalued in society at large. And that's how you accomplish things, because if you wait for validation from outside, especially when I grew up, you're in deep trouble.
Well, Jeffrey, there's a rather poignant moment at the end of the film in the credits where it's an in memoriam list.
Yeah.
It's all of the performers featured in the film who have passed away.
Yeah.
And it's quite a few. And many of them recently.
Yeah, many of them while I was working on it. James Brown and Celia Cruz. Miriam Makeba, very late. And in fact, at the end, I was still keeping the credits open, I mean, in this strange way. I mean, I definitely wanted to honor those people and recognize it, but it really underscores the fact that this whole sort of musical tradition, in a way, is, you know, getting further from us. And we have these wonderful recordings, but the people are no longer around. I mean, obviously, Bill Withers and B.B. King are here, and many of the others. But of the people who performed, it was a very sad, and in some way that's what inspired me to really push forward and make the film. You know, I wanted the sense of wanting to put life back into it and to allow people a view into this musical work and those lives really when they were just top of their game.
Let me clear something up for you. This is actually Muhammad Ali doing my best Bill Withers imitation. I don't know where Bill Withers is. he could or could not be alive.
Thanks, Muhammad.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Well, thank you. But Jeffrey, you weren't old enough to remember. You can't be old enough to remember the concert
and
and the fight as it was happening. So what was it like for you to go back over this material? Obviously, people are going to watch this film with different eyes depending on who they are.
Yeah.
There are people who will remember it and think, wow, I wish I had been there, or wow, it was great to be there. But there are people like you.
Yeah,
and
had no consciousness
just, there's no
of
way.
Time. So... Yeah, I think it was really a type of time travel, you know, and if the film has any criticism, I mean, many people criticize it for all sorts of reasons, but, you know, one thing is it's a little idealized, really, and that just comes from the fact that I was so blown away by the power of the performance, the kind of whole ethic which imbued the venture that I, you know, I got taken into that and wanted to put it forward, and there's definitely... You know, that was a time when music was all about the skill of the performer, their musicianship, their ability to get out there. It wasn't overproduced and managed. And one thing, you know, we have a lot of backstage now, but and a lot of it is sensationalistic and tabloid, but very little of it is emotionally direct and insightful. It's very managed and very manipulated. And I think then there it was anarchy. There was nobody managing much of anything.
You say it's idealized. How did you cut something out?
No, there wasn't
a
really
flattering.
No, not in particular. But I think that I did want to to make it feel as if it was this enjoyable, exuberant time. Let's think about the plane, you know, going over on the plane and the Fania All-Stars are jamming, you know, with B.B. King. Well, there's also other people that are trying to sleep, you know. It was a long flight. But when you see it in a movie, it's like, wow, I wish I was there. But you don't necessarily think, oh, yeah, you weren't sleeping.
That's true. Well, Bill Withers, you're having quite a year. I mean, you've got, there's actually another documentary that you're featured in, Still Bill, which just focuses on you, and then Soul Power. How's it feel?
You know what? I have this great, smart wife who, you know, manages most of those kind of things for me. And she's probably more aware of things like that than I am, you know. I'm just more worried about whether when I go to Home Depot, they'll have the flush valve that I really need in stock.
Well, I hope they do.
You missed that.
I hope they do.
That was a long pause, you know.
Jeffrey, do you have a favorite moment from the film? Besides Bill Withers, of course.
Yeah, no,
his performance. Tell the truth.
His performance is absolutely amazing. And I don't say that, Bill, because you're on the line. You can follow the press. I say that quite often. You know, I can't really say that there's a favorite moment. It's almost like, it's trite to say, but I really love it all. I mean, that's why it's in, their things are in the movie, right?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you what his favorite moment was.
What is it?
This whole filmmaking thing is a long and complicated process. So I bet his favorite moment was when he finished.
Yeah.
So he could get some sleep.
You're right about that, Bill.
Bill Withers is a legendary songwriter and vocalist. He is featured in the new documentary, Soul Power. He was kind enough to join us from Los Angeles. Jeffrey Levy Hinty is the director of the film. He joined us at our studios here in Washington, D.C. The film comes out in New York and Los Angeles on July 10th and in Washington, D.C. on August 7th. I thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, Jeff. You take care, bud.
You too, man.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.